MLB winter meetings beginning today, and Buster Olney, as always, right on top of them for ESPN. And it's different, there's no doubt. We'll get into that in a little bit. But Buster, first of all, appreciate the time. And you had a busy Sunday going back and forth a little bit with the Phillies owner after you had a report that they were considering and actively seeking to potentially trade Zach Wheeler away. And he got a little heated about that report after the fact. So what happened?
Yeah, so I filed a report that what had been communicated by the Phillies front office to other teams is that they're willing to listen to offers on Zach Wheeler, who, you know, last year, first year of that five-year, $118 million deal. So I reported that, and John Middleton was very upset about it and called me and said, in effect, that if he was offered Babe Ruth or Ted Williams or Mike Schmidt, he would not trade Zach Wheeler for them. And I mentioned to him that I had heard this directly from people in other front offices. He said they're lying to you. And he also said he didn't authorize anyone to talk about Zach Wheeler. And ultimately, I mean, the biggest takeaway is that you now have the Phillies owner on the record saying Zach Wheeler's not available for trade. However, I can tell you, like, literally in the middle of my call with John Middleton, I was getting texts from folks with other teams saying, yeah, your report's right. And then Ken Rosenthal today of The Athletic reported, you know, what I did. He confirmed what I had reported. Other people have confirmed what I reported. There's no question that the Phillies front office communicated to other teams that Zach Wheeler was available for offers. And it really, to me, reveals the fact that, John – and the people working on him on the front office, they're not on the same page. Maybe they are now after John has said that he's not available for trade. But keep in mind, during this whole time, they're still in the process of trying to hire someone to head up baseball operations at a time when other teams in the division are being really aggressive and getting better. The Mets being at the top of the list. The Braves are in a good spot. This does not reflect well on the Phillies, the confusion over this information.
And it's one thing to not be on the same page about maybe, you know, Rhys Hopkins, but it's another thing to be not on the same page about your frontline starter. That's more than alarming than anything else.
Well, and I think Rosenthal couched it right in his story today. Look, you know, these conversations when teams are facing financial decisions, and the Phillies aren't alone in perhaps having some difficult financial decisions after the 2020 pandemic year. And it would be, I think, you know, in keeping with how front offices do their jobs to just say, look, if you guys have an interesting idea on Zach Wheeler, you know, bring us, an offer and then maybe we'll talk about that. And maybe use, if you did trade a Zach Wheeler for prospects or for pitching, maybe use that financial flexibility to re-sign JT Realmuto. So there are definitely a lot of scenarios through which it makes sense for them to listen. But now John Middleton is on the record saying Zach Wheeler's not available for trade.
Buster Olney, of course, ESPN with us. All right, last time we spoke, we were talking about the high-level free agents. And the thought was that maybe the big, big numbers were not even going to be there for the top-end guys. What's your read on the market right now for those top three or four free agents?
Yeah, I think they'll do fine. And really, we're talking about JT Realmuto. We're talking about George Springer. We're talking about Trevor Bauer. And we'll extend it to a fourth in DJ LeMahieu. They're going to be fine. They're never going to lack for food. but I do think that, you know, where they sit compared to their brethren in the middle class is very different. I think the guys below that are going to get hammered, and they're going to be a lot of 1 and 2 year deals. Now, when it comes to, you know, Springer, I think the question is going to be in the negotiations, is it going to be a fifth or sixth year in the offer that's forthcoming from, say, a team like the Mets or the Blue Jays? Is DJ LeMahieu going to wind up getting a fifth year? Is Trevor Bauer going to be willing to take a multi-year deal? What's so interesting to me, Chris, is since I talked to you last, you know, I talk to agents and say, okay, who's being aggressive out there? And the list is short, and it constantly comes back to the same two teams. The Mets are aggressive, and the Blue Jays are aggressive. And besides that, it doesn't seem like there are a lot of opportunities. I think, you know, we talked about the prime free agents. I think we also have to throw Francisco Lindor into the mix, the Indian shortstop, who's almost certainly going to be traded before the start of the 2021 season.
You know, this is, it's strange to me for some of those guys who are going to be in that position, who are thinking about 1 and 2 year deals. And listen, it may not be their choice, but you're a year out from the CBA and things could drastically change. If you're the guy that's thinking I'll go out there and I'll have a prove it year, that may not even make a difference. Am I reading that wrong?
I think you're reading it right. It depends on the level of dysfunction over that, over the CBA. You know, and Lindor is a great example of this, where if Lindor's traded, based on what we saw with Mookie Betts last winter, it probably would make sense for Lindor to make his best deal. Let's say he's offered, he traded the Mets just for argument's sake, and they offer him $250 million. If I were his agent, I'd say, you better take that, because we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, we go into next you know, next summer, let's say the negotiations over the 2021 season are ugly, which is, I think, a reasonable assumption based on what we saw last year. And then you have the CBA talks, and if the two sides can't get together, I mean, the ugliness may drag well into 2022. So I think that absolutely is affecting a lot of the offers to these free agents. The other thing, too, is just the sheer volume. You know, you and I talked last time about how, you know, after those, what was it, 54, 55 non-tenders last week, there's a huge number of players who are available to sign, and supply and demand works against a lot of these guys.
Buster Olney with us, of course, of ESPN, right in the middle of the winter meetings. Buster, the Yankees, with where we stand now with Brian Cashman and Hank Steinbrenner, and look, we know this is not the same as it was when it was George, but it kind of looks like they're a team that at this point can't afford to wash away the mistakes, the expensive mistakes like they used to be, and that is really where they're getting caught the most, considering the amount of money that's out there on some guys that they haven't gotten the return on.
Yeah, I mean, 3 years ago, it was interesting when, you know, guys like Aaron Judge were young. It really did seem like the Yankees were set up well going forward, and I personally thought when they traded for Giancarlo Stanton, hey, great job. You know, you're getting the MVP of the National League at the right time in his prime of his career. Well, all of a sudden, you know, with Stanton being hurt a lot and him making a big salary, and now you're saying Gerrit Cole, they're boxed in pretty well. If, in fact, they're not willing to spend a lot of money, and I think a lot of, as we talked about, a lot of teams are not willing to spend a lot of money going into 2021 because of the uncertainty when fans are going to be in the stands. The perception of other teams is that the Yankees are willing to spend on DJ LeMahieu, and beyond that, they may be saving their powder for other things that develop during the wintertime. In other words, if the prices drop on all these massive free agents, maybe they dive into that. You know, maybe they make a trade for someone like a Lance Lynn of the Rangers who's available. You know, maybe at some point, as the Indians conversations about Lindor pop up, maybe that's the guy they're going for. But there is definitely a perception among the agents and other teams that the Yankees are, besides LeMahieu, are not necessarily being hyper-aggressive.
If somebody offers LeMahieu $5 and $100, it seems that no matter what offer he gets, he's going to be willing to go back to the Yankees. Would they match that?
You know, and I'm just playing a guessing game, and my guess would be no. I get the feeling that, you know, that they have set a price. It reminds me a little bit of the Robinson Cano negotiations. It feels like the Yankees have set a price on LeMahieu. You know, and only Hal Steinbrenner, if in fact that's what they're doing, would be able to push that forward. The thing that might work for them is that the team that seems to be most aggressive in going against them for LeMahieu are the Blue Jays. He fits them in so many ways. You know, they're looking for a veteran presence. Somebody can move around the diamond. You know, in the middle of all those young players, and we don't even know if the Blue Jays are going to be able to play home games next year because, you know, they were essentially locked out of Canada last year. And you do wonder how that would affect someone like LeMahieu. And I've told you this story before, who shows up in the clubhouse every day. And the first thing he does when he sits down, as Zach Britton told me, is to pull on the Yankees cap. You know, that's what's important to him. You know, DJ may have to make a choice between signing with the Yankees or and possibly passing him more money from Toronto or some other team.
Buster Olney with us. Okay, Lindor, you mentioned him. Where are the Indians going to be here? Are they going to be in a position in a few weeks where the price for what they're asking is going to have to drop considerably?
I don't know if they're going to be able to get what they probably anticipated at the outset of this, because it just doesn't necessarily feel like that there are a lot of teams involved. Look, I think that there's an anticipation that after the Mets get their front office situation settled, that they're going to be one of the bidders. I think the Blue Jays are. Keep in mind that Ross Atkins, their general manager, Mark Shapiro, the club president, they were in Cleveland when they drafted Lindor in 2011, so they know him well. But one of the factors I think that might chase off some of the potential interest teams that might be interested and be willing to bid on him, the fact that next fall there's so many free agent shortstops. So if you don't like the Indians asking price, you can say to yourself, well, next fall I can take a run at Trevor Story or Corey Seager or Javier Baez or Carlos Correa. I think that's going to hurt the Indians' leverage. But the perception that I've heard is that the Indians have kind of made up their mind. Yep. Okay. Now's the time. We it's time for us to move past Lindor, who's been in this. It seems like twice a year or every year for the last 3 years, been in this limbo of whether or not he's going to be traded.
It is bizarre that his name, the quality of player that he is, keeps coming up. Meanwhile, at the same time, you have the Mets, who could possibly be a destination for him. Buster, what is actually realistic? Separate fact from fiction here on Steve Cohen and where they may actually spend, the amount they may actually spend versus what fans might expect them to spend.
I think they're going to be aggressive. And that's based on the conversation with the agents. I'm just about ready to bet the family farm in Vermont that they're going to wind up with Springer. It just feels like such a natural fit. And he, of course, is one of the prime guys. He could play center field for at least a year. He'd help to balance out their lineup. He might be in the $125 to $150 million range. I have heard that Bauer is potentially a priority. I personally think Lindor is a great match for them. Real Muto, we talked about during the summertime, but James McCann, the fact that they were pushing those talks last week, I don't think that was a surprise. I think some of the Mets conversations internally have been, why don't we take the less expensive catcher and then spend the money elsewhere, possibly on Springer, possibly on Bauer, maybe in taking on Lindor. And I will tell you that, a lot of times teams in the last 20 years have been leery of taking on a guy who's going in his free agent year the way Lindor is. But agents are saying now that the best leverage for potential free agents is not to actually hit the open market, but the year before, the winter before they become a free agent, like Mookie Betts got to before he reached that huge deal that he made last summer with the Dodgers.
Buster, how will it play out here with the Mets as far as the power structure? Sandy said he's closer to the head of the table now. They're hiring a GM as opposed to the president of baseball ops. But is it going to be Sandy making the ultimate call, or is it going to be whoever they hire a GM?
Yeah, Sandy's going to be the one who makes the ultimate call. It seems like that they're willing to take on, I think as they made clear, they'll still be looking for someone to head up baseball operations. And Sandy, with all of his experience, I think will take, ultimately have to be the guy who signs off on it to take the recommendation to Steve Cohen.
Where do we stand here with the universal DH situation? Because that's going to affect an awful lot of potential guys looking for work.
Look, if you need an embodiment, an example of the absolute dysfunction between Major League Baseball and the Players Association, which I think is its worst since I started covering baseball back in 1989, it would be with the universal DH. Everybody assumes that not only is this part of baseball's future after the next CBA, but that it's going to be in baseball in 2021. But last week, the Major League Baseball sent a note to all National League teams basically saying, plan on no DH for 2021. Because they, I'm sure, in their offices want to keep that as a leverage point in negotiations. The Player Association people that I talked with, their feeling is, look, if we know it's inevitable, why give up anything for it? So the two sides are in their bunker on this issue that everybody knows probably is going to be resolved with DH for 2021. Meanwhile, if you're Kyle Schwarber, If you are Nelson Cruz, if you're Marcell Ozuna, your free agency is being directly impacted by the fact that no National League team can sit here and plan on a DH. It's insane. You would think that the two sides would be able to break off that issue, go back and forth, do some horse trading, get it on the board so the teams can plan and so the players can be evaluated properly. But it seems like this is going to be one of those things that's going to drag out maybe into late January, early February, as we get closer to what the theoretical start of spring training.
And frankly, it's one of the things that scares the hell out of you for next year, that this is really going to get, as you alluded to earlier, just so much more ugly than just based on what we've seen over the last year.
100%. Look, the negotiations, and I think you'd agree with me, in May and June kind of made you sick to your stomach.
Oh, yeah.
You know, given the context that was going on. And here's the thing. The context is going to be even worse for these negotiations coming up this wintertime because we're going to have these 300 unsigned players. So you're going to have a bunch of veteran players being asked to make some sort of concessions, and I don't know what those are going to be yet, by Major League Baseball. Does anyone think those guys are going to be in the mood for that?
I don't think so. Last one. Because it's a virtual winter meetings, is it going to be a lot quieter than they usually are?
Yes. It's going to be a lot quieter because, and this is the word of the week, the buzzword of the week in baseball seems to be clarity. Everyone is looking for clarity. And the fact is that it's related to a vaccine for coronavirus or how quickly that can be distributed. A lot of times I'll send out information on, vaccine, coronavirus, and you'll have followers. They'll go, I'm here for baseball, not for, that news. And I'm like, that is baseball. Yeah. because the front offices, in determining what their budgets are going to be, they're waiting to see how quickly they can get fans back in the stands before they decide how much money to spend on players.
Buster, I never realized, and of course I should have, I'd never even think of it, that Buster's a nickname. I'm looking up some stuff on the computer today. I didn't realize it was Robert Stanberry Olney III. Where'd you get Buster from?
Oh, yeah. Well, the day or 2 days before I was born, my great grandfather passed away, and he could never remember the name of little kids, and he called them all Buster. So the day I was born, my mom was feeling sad about Captain Bassett, and she was feeling happy about me, and so she started calling me Buster, and I'd never been called anything different other than that first embarrassing day of school when they call the roll and all of it, my friends snicker when they call out Rob Olney or Robert Olney or whatever. Whatever the teacher would say.
Listen, appreciate it during a busy week, Buster. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Chris.